Welcome to the Church of England weekly podcast. In this week's edition, we hear from Brian Heasley of 24/7 Prayer about how they're supporting Thy Kingdom Come.
When we look at the example of Christ, we see that he prayed. Jesus prayed. And for me, if he needed to pray, surely I need to pray also.
The Reverend Canon Professor Jack McDonald talks about the response in Brussels to the recent terror attacks 1 month after they took place.
But I do think the churches and other faith groups have a big role to play in gathering people together and in very clearly teaching tolerance, very clearly teaching that in the end, in Christian terms, it is God and God's love and God's peace which will win.
And the Reverend Richard Taylor and volunteer Liz Matthews speak about their church's plans to celebrate Her Majesty the Queen's 90th birthday.
I think we see it as a great opportunity to do something public and positive, and also, perhaps most importantly, collaborative within our parish.
24/7 Prayer is an international, interdenominational movement of prayer, mission and justice. It's one of the organisations working with the archbishops to deliver Thy Kingdom Come, a week of prayer leading up to Pentecost and culminating in beacon events across the country. Brian Heasley, National Director of 24/7 Prayer in Great Britain, spoke to us about how they're involved and the importance of prayer in the Christian life.
24/7 Prayer is a prayer movement that's been around for 15 years. The idea behind it really was that we could inspire the church to praying night and day for a week. So 24/7 is what it says on the label. Churches all over the place have been praying for a week non-stop for the last 15 years. I think we've seen it happen about 1,200 times in about 120 different countries. It's been very exciting. The idea behind it is a church would sign up, different people within the church sign up for 1 hour. And then they hand it over to the next person, and we get this continuous time of prayer, all facilitated via the internet and sign-up sheets and all that kind of thing. So the idea behind it being a creative space for people to pray. And so one of the reasons we're involved in Thy Kingdom Come is that we have been helping develop some resources about how does a church pray for a week.
So why is prayer such an important part of our lives as Christians?
Well, primarily, when we look at the example of Christ, we see that he prayed. Jesus prayed. And for me, if he needed to pray, surely I need to pray also. But as well as that, I guess the idea of any relationship is that it only really survives with communication and conversation. So for me, prayer is a two-way conversation between man and God, a conversation that's been opened up by the work of Christ on the cross that enables us to have this relationship whereby we can talk with, communicate with God. Even like the disciples in Luke, I think it was Luke 11, verse 1, they said, Lord, teach us to pray. So any disciple of Christ really should be praying. As we see his disciples, they wanted to know, and Christ actually taught them the Lord's Prayer and teaching them to pray. So for me, it's vital in maintaining a living, active Christian faith is a two-way conversation with God, which is what I would call prayer.
And what are you most excited about with both of the archbishops calling for what they're calling a great wave of prayer for evangelism during Pentecost?
I'm really excited about the idea that the church is coming together in many different forums, in many different ways all over the country to pray and actually praying for confidence in the proclamation of the gospel. For me, that's a real key. And I guess 2 Chronicles 7, verse 14 says, if my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray, seek my face, turn from their wicked ways, I will hear from heaven, I will forgive their sin, and I will heal their land. And there's something about God's people who are called by his name, you know, humbling themselves and praying that causes healing in the land. And I guess our land, we will be healed as the kingdom comes, will be healed as the church grows in confidence in its proclamation of the gospel. So I'm really excited about that. I'm excited that people will find new ways of praying, but I'm also excited that people will go deeper in their relationship with God and grow in confidence in the proclamation of the gospel.
So how can churches engage with prayer during this week?
Well, we've developed a really helpful website, thykingdom.co.uk, and on there, there's lots of different resources. I guess if you wanted to do a week of 24/7 prayer, we have a resource for how to set up and run a prayer room. There's liturgical resources. There's resources even for prayer walking. If you, as a congregation or as a group of individuals within your diocese, want to get out and walk about and pray, we've even put resources for that. There's resources around Novena. And one of the most important things we're doing is we're trying to encourage people to pray for 5 other people who don't yet know Jesus. So we have provided some resources around how to pray for 5. So if you go to that website, there's lots and lots of resources on there to help you. And I guess for us, we're not just looking for people to do a week of 24/7 prayer. We know that's not always attainable. Churches are sometimes difficult to open at night. There's different things that go on. So really, to imagine, dream up, think of prayer initiatives that will work for you and your church in your setting.
Do you think there's a right or a wrong way to do prayer?
No, not really. I think that we all communicate in different ways and different styles. I think some of us are more contemplative. Some of us like the written, spoken prayer. Some of us like to think our prayers. Some of us like to, you know, almost... I've seen people paint their prayers, Ben. I've seen people do all sorts of different prayers in different ways. And what I think we have to work against, really, is that we lock prayer into one specific style, and that the key is communication and whatever works best for you. I know a guy who was telling me how he prays when he goes to the gym, and as he lifts each weight, it represents a different member of his family and he lifts them up to God in prayer. I know other people who obviously go away and take monastic retreats and spend 24 hours in silence and everything in between. So I don't think there's a right and a wrong way to pray. I think it's just important that we pray.
If you could encourage Christians with one piece of advice when it comes to their prayer life, what would it be?
The best way to pray is to start praying. The best way to learn to pray is to start praying. And so for me, building a rhythm of prayer into our daily lives is really, really important. If that's 5 minutes, we build it to 10 minutes. If it's 10 minutes, we build it to 15. We look at creative ways to build a rhythm of prayer. So my one piece of advice would be build a rhythm of prayer into your life that works for you. Different for a mum with 2 children trying to get them to school in the morning than it is for someone who's slightly older and has a lot more time in the morning. So we have to find a rhythm that works for us. And that would be my piece of advice for praying.
Remember to visit www.thykingdom.co.uk to find resources for the week of prayer, as well as registering for free tickets to the Beacon events. On the 22nd of March, 3 coordinated bombings took place in Brussels. 1 month on, we spoke to the Reverend Canon Professor Jack MacDonald, the Anglican chaplain in Leuven, Belgium, about the involvement of the Anglican Church there and how the communities have responded.
On Tuesday mornings, I get the train to Brussels and then I get the metro to Merode station, where I also teach in the University of Brussels. And that Tuesday, I would have got that metro, which passes through Malbec. But because it was Holy Week and there was going to be a service in Holy Trinity, I'd cancelled my lecture. And so I was at home for an extra hour, just, you know, having breakfast and messing around, when on the news began to filter through of something atrocious happening in the airport. And because the trains from Leuven to Brussels go through the airport, I thought, there's going to be lots and lots of changes in this country today. And so the news began filtering through of more tragedy happening in the centre of Brussels. And I guess my reaction was that I'd expected something, because the week before we'd had the arrest of Saleh Abdeslam, and net was closing around the remaining members of that terrorist cell in Brussels. And so for them, it was a case of now or never, because the police and security forces were closing in. So there was a sense of resignation and a sense, of course, of horror, and that our life in Belgium was about to change.
And how has the church been involved in the response to the attacks?
Well, very deeply at a number of levels. So, I mean, locally, there are lots of churches in Belgium. There are 10 Anglican parishes in Belgium, and we've been very active in prayer, welcome. We've all felt it's very important to act ecumenically and in interfaith ways. And so there have been lots of joint ecumenical services. Yesterday, there was an interfaith football match in the middle of Brussels. And the churches are deeply engaged in very publicly and unambiguously working with our partners and friends and brothers and sisters to indicate that in our horror at these terrible and atrocious events, we are not just going to wave a white flag and do what the terrorists want, but we are going to work together for peace, a peace which we believe is God's will, and we will do that actively.
And how has it affected relationships between people of different faiths?
In Belgium, we have a strange constitutional situation, which means that seven faiths are recognised and supported by the state. And one of them, luckily for me, is the Anglican Church. But Islam, Judaism, Catholic, Protestant, Orthodox, and Anglican Christianity, and official state secularism are recognised by the state. And so on the 20th of April, the heads of the different recognised religions, and I'm the head of the Anglican Church in Belgium, met together with the Prime Minister and the Minister of Justice to work out what our response would be to what happened a month ago. And in particular, we speak about what we're doing in prisons. All the people involved in the Paris and Brussels attacks have served time in prison, where they have become radicalised. And so what are we doing in terms of interfaith chaplaincy in prisons? And so one concrete gesture that was made at that meeting was to increase the number of prison chaplains, especially for Muslims, but also even the Anglican Church got one extra prison chaplain, on the understanding that we would work together to combat radicalisation in prisons, which we think is a key area. And the other key area is the internet, where, of course, we have much less direct control or influence. But again, talking about how we can act together. And so after this meeting, we had a big press conference, and the television was there, and we were all arm in arm, and publicly subscribing to a declaration, absolutely rejecting religiously motivated violence. And we were delighted, for example, that Archbishop Justin, in the ACC meeting in Lusaka, mentioned religiously motivated violence as one of the two key problems in geopolitics today, along with climate change. And that certainly resonates with us. And we absolutely see, I mean, the Anglican Church in Belgium is 20,000 people, it's tiny, you know, that we need to act with our brothers and sisters on this if the terrorists are to be defeated and their message of hatred and nihilism is to be shown for the lies which it is.
How are people finding healing 1 month on after the attacks?
Well, that's a long process, isn't it? There are people, I forget the exact number, not far off triple figures, who are still in hospital. You know, so they are coping with, I know in one case in particular, known to be of terrible injuries, really life-changing, life-ruining injuries, physical injuries. People who've lost limbs and people who've are really coping with very grave physical disability now because of the terrorists' selfishness and cruelty. And that's a long process. There's a definite sense of the whole country being under a cloud, and under a cloud whereby it's that bit more difficult to trust your neighbour, that bit more difficult just to relax on public transport. But again, the choice is very clear. Either we give in and wave the white flag and start having a hermeneutic of suspicion, or we just refuse to give in and we carry on as normally as we can, and we carry on smiling and using public transport and talking to our neighbours and being absolutely adamant that we are here as a society, we are in this together. An attack has been made in the name of a completely perverted version of religious faith. And the attack is a challenge to democracy, a challenge to living together, a challenge to variety within society. And we have to rise to that challenge. But the healing process whereby we are feeling normal again I suspect, is a very long-term thing. But I do think the churches and other faith groups have a big role to play in gathering people together and in very clearly teaching tolerance, very clearly teaching that in the end, in Christian terms, it is God and God's love and God's peace which will win.
Finally this week, we hear from the Reverend Richard Taylor and volunteer Liz Matthews from St Barnabas Clapham Common about their plans to celebrate Her Majesty the Queen's official birthday in June. Richard started by reflecting on their celebrations for the Queen's Diamond Jubilee.
The basic celebration for the Jubilee was a street party for two neighbouring roads within the parish, and we closed them off to traffic, set up tables and chairs down the middle of the road for eating and drinking, set up a stage for entertaining, and of course a stall for the obligatory cake competition. We kicked off the day, I think, with some memories of the coronation itself, because one of our members of church was the head girl of Greycoat School and was invited into Westminster Abbey on that occasion. So we started off with an eyewitness account of the coronation of the Queen, which is a lovely way to begin. And as the day wore on, we had a sing-along with some 50s pop songs. We had some opera and some beatboxing. Our local MP joined us for some of the day. There were some games organised for the children, some face painting. And by the end of the afternoon, people were bringing out their garden furniture to make sure we could stay on the road as long as possible and keep the party going.
And Liz, talk to us about what your plans are for this celebration.
So for this celebration, it probably will be very similar to the Jubilee celebrations. It's going to be on the 12th of June. We have already contacted the council, Wandsworth Council, for the road closure, which has been accepted. And very kindly, Wandsworth Council have now refunded everybody for the cost of the road closure, and the whole of Wandsworth, if they want to have street parties, there won't be any cost for it, which is really, really good. We have various members of the community on board. We have a club at the end of the road on Lavender Gardens who are going to be helping with a barbecue and providing a stage. And at the other end, there's a pub which will be hopefully providing a band. Also, we have the Battersea Arts Centre on board, who are going to provide the beatbox again, which also appeared at the Jubilee. And also, we have a share community, which is an organisation that helps adults with educational needs and various disabilities, who are coming on board as well. They're going to be doing cake baking and helping out on the day. We would have a similar setup of tables down the middle of the road and bunting up, which has been made. And also we will have members of the church who are going to be helping with also with cakes and helping out on the day. We will have Punch and Judy, which will be quite good fun. We'll have a cake competition as well. Then there's a lady who is a member of the community who is making a 90th birthday cake for the Queen as well.
Well, it sounds like there's a lot going on, which sounds fantastic. Why is the church getting involved with this celebration? What's important about it?
I think we see it as a great opportunity to do something public and positive, and also, perhaps most importantly, collaborative within our parish. So, you know, organising a party is a way of teasing out the community life that we existing but are often too busy to enjoy and to celebrate. And it's a way of getting neighbours talking to each other. It's an opportunity to enjoy the feeling of closing the road to traffic and changing the feel of a busy London road. There's something quite liberating about doing that too. When we floated the idea, other people kind of thought like we did and thought it's a great opportunity to get on board. And I guess, a pub in the church, which we've got one at either end of our road, so we're quite lucky in that respect. But in a sense, if both are doing their jobs properly, then they're looking to create and deepen relationships with the people who come to them, because that's what, brings them life and success. So there's a lot of common ground with the organisations in our parish anyway who have got involved. And I think we all feel the same, that we want to do something together which gets people outside their houses, gets neighbours talking to each other, and is a chance to relax and enjoy what's going to be a national occasion in our own local neighbourhood.
You talked about the kind of the collaborative project between community life here. What does it mean to the local community to have something like this put on for them to celebrate and, I guess, get to know each other a bit more?
I'm not sure I can speak for everyone, you know, entirely authoritatively, but I'd like to think, you know, for them as for us, it's a way of celebrating where you live and an opportunity to meet those you live with but may have never spoken to. So, you know, relationships, community, neighbourliness, and the positive things that can hopefully grow out of that going forward. I think we're probably all on the same page and hoping it makes where we live an even better place to live.
I think it's bringing all different age groups together as well, both old and young. I know from the last party there was lots of children on the road, but also there was the older community as well. And I think bringing those two together is really, really important.
So it sounds like there's lots of stuff going to be happening, lots of things to plan and get sorted. Where do you see the gospel in this celebration that's going to be taking place?
First of all, it's not an opportunity for the church to preach or seek simply to grow its membership. So in that respect, you know, the gospel is going to be underlying and in the background, and the most explicit we'll get is we'll have some books on offer, free books, which about the Queen and her own life of faith in her own words from the speeches she's given over the years. The book's called The Servant Queen and the King She Served, and we'll be giving out copies for that if anyone is interested. It's a gift for people to take away. But I mean, with themes like building community and encouraging neighbourliness, I don't think it's too hard to, you know, dig into your Bible and find that those are crucial to church and the people of God and the way we're called to live in the world together. And if you think about this specific occasion, a Sunday afternoon party in honour of a life which has been very well and honourably lived, I think that expresses something of what the Sabbath is all about. It's a freedom to step away from the busyness and the anxiety of life, a chance to reach across boundaries and meet others, and a chance to celebrate life together in a really positive way.
And to find out about events taking place across the country to celebrate the Queen's 90th birthday, you can visit www.churchcare.co.uk. That's it for this week. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at @C_of_E. And like our Facebook page to stay up to date with news during the week. Thanks for listening.